It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Emily Campagno, and this is the Fox True Crime Podcast.
Tensions are heating up in a Boston courtroom, with the attention on the defendant at the center of the case, Karen Reed. Reed has been charged with second-degree murder for the death of her then-boyfriend, Boston Police Officer John O'Keefe. On January 29, 2022, Officer O'Keefe was found unresponsive in the snow outside of a home in Canton, Massachusetts. An autopsy later ruled Officer O'Keefe's cause of death was hypothermia and blunt force trauma. Reed was later arrested and charged with second-degree murder, manslaughter while operating under the influence, and leaving the scene of personal injury or death. Reed has pleaded not guilty and alleges that she has been framed as part of a police cover-up. Joining me today with a look at the many twists and turns of this high-profile case is Fox 25 Boston reporter Ted Daniel. Ted, earlier this week, we saw the Karen Reed murder trial kick off. Now, give us some background into the case at hand.
Yeah, this case has been going on for more than 2 years now. It began on January 29, 2022, when the body of a Boston police officer was found in the snow in Canton, Massachusetts. That's a suburb of Boston, about 30 minutes south. And at first, we now know that officers didn't know what they had, but within 28, 48 hours, they charged the officer's girlfriend, Karen Reed, with striking him. Initially, it was a manslaughter case, but then later they indicted her for second degree murder. And the reason why there's so much attention on this case is the defense has claimed that Karen Reed has been framed, and they blame prosecution witnesses, and they say that law enforcement is involved in what they characterize as a cover-up.
The fact that there are allegations of a deeper cover-up scheme and that it, you know, allegedly involves law enforcement sort of reads like a Hollywood film, right? So tell us a little bit more about that. What exact details is Karen Reed alleging here?
Well, her attorneys say that Karen dropped John O'Keefe, her boyfriend, off at this home, 34 Fairview Road in Canton. And what they say is that John actually went inside this home where there were another law enforcement officer, another Boston cop who was the homeowner. There was his buddy who was an ATF agent, and there were another family and friends inside that home. And what the defense says is that John was jumped inside that home, that they attacked him and beat him up. And a dog actually came after him as well. He has these injuries on his arm. And they say they pulled him outside to the bulkhead of the basement, and they brought him to essentially the front yard of the home where the body had been was discovered earlier in the morning, around 6:30 that morning. And there's a number of strange things that they have pointed to that they say sort of substantiate this cover-up, including one of the witnesses who is inside that home. They have a phone record that says that she Googled how long to die in the cold at 2:27 a.m. This is the same woman who called 911 at 6:30 a.m. and said, hey, this body has just been found. So we also have a separate parallel federal investigation. The feds got word that there were some inconsistencies and some allegations of a cover-up, and they ran their own investigation of this case. And some of the evidence that they found is being used by the defense in their effort to try to show the jury their allegation that Reed's being framed.
Can you share a little bit about what that exact evidence is?
Right. So all that came through what's called the TUI process. That's sort of where the state court asks the federal court to, hey, please turn all this information over. It's similar to a subpoena, but it's different wording. And we don't know. We know that 3,000 pages of documents have been turned over, but we don't know what's in there other than what we hear from the defense and the prosecution in the courtroom. because both sides had to sign an agreement that said they wouldn't publish any of the federal findings in this case, but they are allowed to talk about them. One of the people that the defense has accused of being a part of this cover-up, they say that he admitted to the federal grand jury that he, you know, months later went and broke his SIM card and destroyed his phone. There are phone calls that some of these witnesses claim to have never made, and it shows them talking in the early hours of when, you know, the defense says that, you know, shortly after the defense says that they attacked John O'Keefe. So there are a number of kind of strange occurrences that the defense is really harping on.
And so what about the prosecution now? How has the prosecution framed and developed their argument about Reed's role in the death of Officer O'Keefe?
Yeah, I think they had a few strong witnesses in the first days of testimony. We've heard from a number of first responders, including a paramedic who was ventilating John O'Keefe on the ground, the first person to get to him. And he says, you know, it's always in his mind to ask people at the scene, hey, what happened? And he says Karen Reed told him, I hit him, I hit him, I hit him. And then there's another police officer who responded to the scene who said he overheard Karen say it was my fault. But the defense is trying to poke holes at those statements. They're essentially saying that the EMT who claimed he heard Karen say I hit him did not report that until a week later. And the first time this became an official part of the record in this case is when he spoke with the lead detective from the Massachusetts State Police. And he's one of the main people that the defense have accused of being corrupt.
We're going to take a quick break. More from our guest after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so let's talk about the defense team a little bit more and who exactly is on it. We understand that one of those attorneys there represented Kevin Spacey, for example. Who are the players here on that team, and what are some more of the bombshell accusations that they're making?
Yeah, so the attorney you're referencing, he is Alan Jackson. He's from Los Angeles. He also represented Harvey Weinstein, as you said, Kevin Spacey, when he had a trial in Nantucket, Massachusetts. And Jackson is a very accomplished attorney. He's an excellent speaker. I think people have described him as very smooth in a courtroom. He has an ability to sort of gain someone's confidence when he speaks. The other attorney is a longtime Boston attorney who used to be a prosecutor, a guy named David Yannetti. And David has had other big cases, but nothing of this magnitude. And one of the things that's kind of been interesting to see is just how aggressive they've gone after the police. They even went after the judge. They tried to get her kicked off the case, claiming that she had, you know, connections to some of the people that they say are involved in John O'Keefe's death. And from, you know, the courthouse steps, they've been screaming. I mean, David Yannetti's first line in his opening statements were, Karen Reed was framed. And the amount of time and dedication that they've spent to trying to share that argument, I mean, that's been going on now for 2 years with a lot of fanfare.
Okay, so fleshing out that fanfare, and a lot of it is happening outside of the court. How has the community as a whole reacted to this case? And what can you tell me about Officer John O'Keefe and the kind of man that he was in life?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like the amount of attention this case is getting and how dug in people are on both sides. It's the most polarizing case I've ever been a part of. There was a blogger who really took up Karen Reed's fight for innocence here and gained a lot of traction. We've later learned from filings that, you know, that the defense was providing him information selectively throughout the course of events leading up to the trial. But he's done a pretty powerful job of galvanizing all these people who come out in front of the courthouse. The judge had to make a buffer zone, saying that, you know, people had to be 200 feet on either side of the courthouse because they're all out there with free Karen Reed signs. They have signs that say Karen Reed's been framed. And it's, if you go, my Twitter's, you know, or X account is kind of focused on this case. And all I see are these arguments every day, people going back and forth, the people who say she's guilty, the people who say she's innocent. And it's kind of created, there's these own little worlds, these own little dramas that have occurred, you know, as this trial begins. As for John O'Keefe, he sounded like an amazing guy. He was a Boston cop. He lived in Canton, and he lived in Canton with his niece and nephew. His family has experienced a ton of loss. John's sister and his brother-in-law both died. So John decided that he would raise his sister's kids, and was doing that when he was killed. But you know, his family is in court every day to support the prosecution. They believe Karen Reed is guilty.
Oh, that's just so heartbreaking. So they believe Karen Reed is guilty. What was the relationship like? Was it publicly volatile? Did the family, were they aware of there being discord present between Karen Reed and Officer O'Keefe while they were together?
That's a huge part of the prosecution's argument. They're saying that things had soured in the weeks leading up to John O'Keefe's death. There was this trip they took to Aruba a few weeks before John was killed, and they said that there was a big argument there. And part of what they used to indict Karen was her own text messages and phone calls. Prosecution says they have voicemails of Karen calling John after she allegedly hit him, saying, "I hate you," and putting that in text. So they're trying to say that Karen had already moved on and had started, you know, texting another guy, and that she was highly intoxicated, they say. That's a part of her charging. And that she got extremely upset with him outside this home. They say that, you know, John gets out of her large Lexus SUV, and they're claiming that she put it in reverse and ran over him. And the prosecution says they have data from her Lexus that shows that she traveled 60 feet in reverse at 24 miles an hour. And that's a part of the evidence they are using in their effort to convict her. But it's funny, I've seen surveillance video of them before John was killed. They're all at a bar in the town with friends. And, you know, those images look like a loving couple. They're kind of, you know, side by side. At one point, she kisses him. But, you know, that is just one snapshot in time.
Right. How has this impacted the jury? Did the protests have an impact on jury selection? Have there been motions made by defense or by prosecution that are arguing that the jury cannot be impartial with these protests? Or how has that made an impact on the court?
Well, they interviewed about 500 people to pick the 19 jurors that they ended up with. And that it took longer than it took to select the Trump jury, just to give you a better idea. And I was in court every day for jury selection. And one of the questions they would ask everybody by a show of hands, how many people have spoken about this case or heard about it? And, you know, usually 70% of the people in that courtroom would raise their hands. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to find people, okay, you may have heard something about the case, but can you take whatever preconceived notion or whatever you heard, put that aside, listen to directly to the evidence, and focus just on what you hear in court and nothing else. The jury is being brought in by bus. They're under police escort. So I think the court is trying to do their best to keep them away from all these outside influences. But I think it would be impossible for them not to see all the people who are out there demonstrating on Karen Reed's behalf every single morning. They've been doing that for every court case leading up to her trial.
Right. I mean, that's going to be hard, I would think, for the defense to argue adequately that indeed the jury has been effectively shielded from that? That should the prosecution argue that they've been inappropriately affected or need to be more sequestered, it would be difficult to surmount that burden, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the defense probably, you got to wonder if it's beneficial to the defense, the fact that all those people are outside supporting, you know, Karen Reed, that if that ever, if these jurors are ever seeing this stuff, that hey, they may be wondering, why is this case getting, you know, why are there so many reporters in the courtroom? Why are people so interested in this case? And it is because of these allegations of corruption and a cover-up and all the sort of weird things that have transpired that we've learned about over the course of the process leading up to the trial.
Ted, what is next for this trial?
Well, we're still in the prosecution phase of the trial. The prosecution has the burden of proof, so they go first. So far, we've heard from a couple members of John O'Keefe's family, and we've also heard from first responders. My understanding is there'll be more first responders Thursday, and then there's going to be a view that the jury will be taken to the scene where this happened on Friday. We're looking at 7 to 8 weeks, they said, before this trial is all said and done. The prosecution has about 80 people on their witness list, the defense about the same. They may not call all those people, but there's a lot of people they want to get through. And people are watching it very intently. It's hard to gauge nationally, but especially in Massachusetts, it's very clear that there hasn't been a trial like this in a very long time.
Well, Ted Daniel, we are so grateful that you joined us today to cover it. And we will certainly have you back as this trial develops. And of course, for the undoubtedly explosive ending, whatever that may be. Thank you.
Thank you.
To hear more stories like this, you can listen to our past episodes on the Fox True Crime Podcast. Go to foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts to listen and subscribe. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. If you have a story or topic you want to hear on the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at truecrimepodcast@fox.com.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.